from Hebrews chapter 11, if you want to put a finger there this morning. But in Hebrews chapter 11, it's called the great chapter of faith because the writer gives us a list of all the heroes of faith and tells us a little bit about their story. And some of it, the writer assumes that his original hearers would know because they know their heritage and they know the beginning and they know all of their history. And so he makes reference to different parts of it. And so we've been following the heroes of faith in the order that they're written there in Hebrews 11. And we started with Abel and we learned how he was a true worshiper from his heart towards God. And from Abel, we looked at Enoch and we learned that Enoch was so righteous. He was a man who walked with God and then one day walked from earth into heaven. And then we looked at Noah. And we learned that by faith, Noah built a huge boat in the middle of a dry desert because God told him to. Then last week, we looked at Abraham. We learned how Abraham lived by faith. We learned how Abraham left everything that he was and everything that he knew. He left his homeland to follow God to a place where God said, go and I'll show you the place, but I won't tell you where it is until you start to move that way. And so it was like every step of the journey, God would lead him. And by faith, Abraham lived. And it brings us to the next people on the list. And so we're going to bite off a lot because the writer of the Hebrews does three short verses, beginning with Hebrews 11:20. And those short verses are a summary of some very long and wonderful stories of the faith of our heroes. And so Hebrews 11 verse 20 says this. By faith Isaac blessed Jacob and Esau in regard to their future. By faith Jacob, when he was dying, blessed each of Joseph's sons and worshipped as he leaned on the top of his staff. By faith Joseph, when his end was near, spoke about the exodus of the Israelites from Egypt and gave instructions concerning the burial of his bones. And so this morning we're going to take a look at these three patriarchs, Isaac, Jacob, and Joseph. Three patriarchs whose stories are quite long. Three patriarchs whose stories are filled with faith in the promise of God. Three patriarchs whose life was about blessing the generations to come after them. And so I'm going to take us through some tidbits of their stories. It's three wonderful stories. And the writer to the Hebrews only gives us a glimpse. And we're going to look at that glimpse and what it means in the full story of being faithful and living with God. And so let's begin with our first one, Isaac. Isaac. Isaac has the shortest story of all the patriarchs, yet he lived longer than all of the patriarchs. I don't know why it's done that way, but he lived to be older than the others, but his story in scripture is shorter than all the others. It doesn't mean there is no story, just his story is a little bit shorter. And we don't know why. But we're told this one thing, when Isaac was beginning on his journey, he was together in this place and a famine hit the land. And in the midst of that famine, God spoke to him and moved him to the city of Gerar, which is in the land of the Philistines. And so Isaac takes his family and moves there. And as he moves there, God gives him a promise. God gives him, if you would, a prophetic word, a promising word to him. And it's found in Genesis 26. And it says this. God says to him, stay in this land for a while, and I will be with you and will bless you. For to you and your descendants I will give all these lands, and will confirm the oath I swore to your father Abraham. I will make your descendants as numerous as the stars in the sky, and give them all these lands, and through your offspring all nations on earth will be blessed. Do those words sound familiar at all to you? They are very similar to the words that God spoke to his father Abraham. where God called Abraham and said, I'm going to make out of you, if you remember, a mighty nation. He waited 25 years for a son. We talked about that last. I'm going to make out of you a mighty nation, more numerous than the stars in the sky and the sands on the seashore. And here, God speaks almost the same words. He makes the same promise. He says, as I promised to Abraham, I promise to you. You need to catch that, because that's the key to Isaac's life. The promise I made to Abraham is the promise I make to you. God is directly passing the promise onto Isaac. See, we said last week that Abraham died believing in faith for a great nation and a great promised land. But he died without receiving it. And many times we think that the promise dies when we see the end of it, but we don't see the end of it. See, the promise didn't die with Abraham. The promise is rooted in God. And because God never dies, the promise never dies. And God says to Isaac, the promise that was to your father is now to you and your descendants. God is saying, Abraham may not have possessed the land, but the promise is still true. Abraham may have waited a long time, but the promise is still going to come through. Then God began to bless Isaac. And in the story of Isaac, the Philistines begin to get jealous of him. Remember, he's living in the land of the Philistines. Yes, the same Philistines as David and Goliath, if you're wondering, which is much, much later in history. Same place. And they were jealous of Isaac's wealth, and it seems like he, you know, whatever he did, God blessed. And so his herds grew bigger and his cattle grew fatter, and it was probably much more tasty. And I don't know if he grew vegetables, but you know, his tomatoes must have been this big and watermelons this big. I don't know. I'm just saying God blessed him. But we're told in the Bible this story that Isaac's men would dig the wells for their well-being, and the Philistines would come along and close the wells. They'd shovel the dirt back in, seal the well. And so they would move further and further from one to the other. And it seems that even though in the very midst of those wells being closed, we can all say, wow, you know, God, like, I thought you were blessing me, but these Philistines are chasing me away. Like, I build a well, they close a well. I build another one, they close another one. Like this is no good, but maybe. See, we sometimes see with narrow focus. We only see this well, but God sees the next 10. For a moment, we see that, you know, we're doing all this, but it just seems to be getting cut off. But in the meantime, God is preparing us to move us to the next well. And it seems that as Isaac is going and as these wells are being closed, he's moving more and more towards the destiny that God is going to move him out of Philistine land and towards promised land. And in the course of time, we're told that Isaac would eventually have two sons. They were twins. Twin boys. You probably know their names, Esau and Jacob. See, for the first part of their married life together, Isaac's wife, Rebekah, was barren. She could have no children. Isaac prayed to God for children. It took 20 years. See, we're getting better. His father waited 25. He's only waiting 20. You know, God's moving on their side. And after praying for all these years and believing God for a son, God blessed him with twin boys, Esau and Jacob. And Rebekah was told something prophetic about these boys. While she was carrying them in her womb, Genesis 25 says this, the Lord said to her, two nations are in your womb, and two peoples from within you will be separated. One people will be stronger than the other, and the older will serve the younger. Now you have to understand that, you know, we look back and that's hundreds and centuries and millennium ago, actually. We look back and we go, well, that makes sense. We know that now. But it didn't make sense to Rebecca. You see, because in the normal, natural order of that day, the oldest was always preferred to the youngest. The oldest always got more than any of the others behind them. It's just the way it went. And so in the normal course of time, Esau the older should have received twice the blessing that Jacob the younger would have received. But God gives a prophetic word before these boys are ever born. And he tells their mother, the older will serve the younger. The younger will be predominant to the older. And in that patriarchal system, it doesn't matter what we think about it, whether we liked it or not. It's got nothing to do with the story. The fact of the matter is God put a prophetic call on that younger one named Jacob. See, God often reverses man's natural order. Our society thinks that we've got it all together. You know, we think that we've got it all figured out. We've got to do it the way we want to do it because we're in charge. Yet God says to us through this story, you're not in charge at all. You can open wells, I can close them. You can think you're camping one way and I'll move you somewhere else. You think the natural order is that you're in charge. God says, I'm in charge. I'm the one who decides how we're going to progress through this thing. And so God is showing us this morning that he is in control right from the beginning. And we fool ourselves. And we lie to ourselves when we say, God, I got this. God, I don't need your interference right now. Thank you very much. I think I've got this figured out. Thank you, but no thanks. See, God's in control. And then Isaac is coming to the end of his life and he knows that he's dying. And the story here is told that Isaac decides to call his favorite son. You see, Isaac preferred Esau and Rebekah preferred Jacob. Now I'm a parent of three kids and I don't get that. I honestly don't. My kids all think they're my favorite. They are. They're all my favorite. They just are. But Isaac prefers Esau and Rebekah prefers Jacob. And as Isaac is preparing to die, he knows he's coming to the end of his life and he wants to bless his son. He wants to bless Esau, the eldest, because that's the way it's supposed to be done. And so he tells Esau, come, you know, and Esau was like a hunter. He says, Esau, go out and hunt and get my favorite animal and prepare my favorite dish and bring it to me. And the Bible tells us he's quite old. He's blind. He can't see. He kind of feels his way around and go do that and bring it. And then I'm going to bless you. And then I'm going to die. But his wife hears about it and she calls Jacob and says, and she comes up with an elaborate plan. Here, go disguise yourself, put on your brother's clothes, put on your brother's cologne. It didn't have cologne. The cologne was, you know, but you know, try and pretend your brother, put fur on your skin and I'll cook a meal like your father's favorite. He won't know. You'll bring it to him and you'll get the blessing. Now, not the right thing to do. I'm not saying that's the right thing. That's just, I'm telling you what it says. See, the Bible doesn't hide our sin. Sometimes the Bible tells us about our faults and our weaknesses, but how God can overcome those things at that time. So Isaac does this. Now this is what I say. I say Isaac should have known better. I mean, he should have known better. He's not to prefer one over the other. He should remember what the prophetic word over these boys was before they were born. Isaac should know better. He's old enough. You know, he's got enough wisdom in this world. He should know better. Isaac should know that he should call both boys in and bless them together. But no, he's got this preference for Esau. And so this happens. And Jacob does what his mother says. And he goes in and he tricks. At first, you know, Esau goes, no, you don't sound like Esau. You sound like Jacob, but you smell like Esau. You know, you feel like Esau. And so he eats the meal and then he blesses Jacob, thinking it's Esau. And he gives him huge blessing and, you know, how God's going to use him, how a great nation is going to come from him. Then Esau returns from the fields and finds out what? And to skip this, he's full of rage and angry, and he threatens he's going to kill his brother. And then Esau dies. And then Isaac dies. Sorry, not Esau. Isaac dies. What is it that Isaac passed on? What is the inheritance that Isaac blessed Jacob with? He blessed him with the promises of God. He blessed him that the promise of Abraham that was on Isaac would now be on Jacob. He blessed him that Jacob would be part of that patriarch of the great nation that God promised Abraham. He blessed him that Jacob would be the one who would see a nation born. He blessed him with all of those things. He didn't bless him with material wealth. He didn't bless him with his bank account. He didn't bless him with his flocks. I'm sure the boys all got that. In fact, let me take that back. Jacob got none of that because Jacob ran for his life. Esau got everything of material wealth. But Jacob got everything of eternal value. Jacob got the blessing of Abraham and Isaac passed on to him. He got the blessing of future generations. He got the blessing of future hope. He got the blessing that a nation would be born and possess the promised land just like God said. And that blessing would fall to Jacob. What are you passing on to your children and your descendants? Sometimes we get caught up in our societal norms that, you know, I've gotta pad my RSP, I've gotta pad my pension plan, I gotta make sure that I have something to leave my children. What are you leaving your children? Yeah, it's great to leave them a house and it's fun to leave them money. But what's more important is we leave them something of eternal value. We leave them a heritage of a promised land. And like I told you last week, our promised land is eternity with God. Our promised land is heaven. Our promised land is that place where there's always hope and no sorrow. What kind of heritage do we want to pass on to our children? What kind of life do we want to live before our children? That's Isaac. And then there's Jacob. Jacob had an up and down faith and walk with God. He had times of great faith and he had times of great defeat. He had times where he did and saw some wonderful things, and there were times where he just blew it. See, that's Jacob. See, God would bring him through many situations that would reveal his heart and change him. And like I told you, it's Jacob that stole Esau's blessing. He really did. He stole it. Now, God prophetically said it would belong to him, but he stole it. And because he stole it, he had to literally run for his life. He ran because Esau was so angry, he wanted to kill him at that moment. And so Jacob lived many, many years away from his family. In fact, he would go and he'd meet the girl of his dreams. And he would tell his future father-in-law, if you let me marry her, I'll work for you for 7 years. And the father said, well, work for 7 years first. Ah, think about that. So he worked 7 years and his father-in-law pulled a fast one and he married the wrong girl. See, because she had an older sister who wasn't married yet. And in that frame of time, you can't marry the younger out before you marry the older. So, you know, on his honeymoon night, and I don't know how that all worked, but he found out it was the wrong girl. And he was angry, so he went to his father and saw, what have you done? He said, well, I can't marry the younger sister without marrying the older sister first, so you can have both of them. But work another 7 years. He said, at first I'll marry her and then I'll work 7 years. And so that's what he did. So he ended up with both these wives and he worked 14 years and he was tricked into the... And then he'd eventually have to get away from his father-in-law and set up a whole new home somewhere else. See, Jacob understood the plan of God. He understood that the faith of his fathers, Abraham and Isaac, was on him. He understood that the promise that was Abraham's and then given to Isaac had been given to him because his father had blessed him with it. But he understood, not only was he blessed with it, he understood that he carried the weight of carrying that responsibility into the next generation. And so that's what Jacob is, and that's who Jacob is and what he does. And then as we read the story of Jacob in verse 21 that we had in our text, Hebrews 11, 21, it refers to Joseph in Jacob's story. It refers to his blessing. See, here's where the story is really found in Genesis 48. It said, then Israel said to Joseph, by the way, Israel is Jacob. There'd come a time in Jacob's journey when God would say, you're no longer called Jacob, you're called Israel. Oh, the promise of Abraham given to Isaac, placed on Jacob, becomes the nation Israel. They didn't just happen to be a nation in our day. They happened to be the fulfillment of a promise to a man named Abraham, who changed the third generation son's name from Jacob to Israel. Then Israel, or Jacob, but Israel said to Joseph, I am about to die, but God will be with you and take you back to the land of your fathers. Remember that they are living in Egypt at this time. See, here we are, hundreds of years from Abraham, and they're still not in a promised land. But Jacob says to Joseph, you're going to end up in the promised land. I see it in faith. I see it because I know who God is. Once again, we see what was promised was never possessed, or what was never possessed was passed on in faith. And Jacob dies as a man of faith, man of faith, who believes in the promises that are on him. Jacob reminds us about the importance of passing our faith onto the next generation. That it wasn't just enough for him to die with the hope, that he had to give that hope to Joseph and his generation. The story of Jacob tells us it's never wrong to hang on to faith and believe. It's never wrong to hold on to the promises of God. It's never wrong that even though sometimes we think it takes too long. How many have ever thought God took too long? Let's be honest. Okay, seven of us are honest. Oh, I'm there. God takes too long. I will be the first to admit that in my timetable, God always takes too long. Because I'm the kind of guy who's like, God promised it to me today, so I expected it yesterday. It's one of my shortcomings. It is what it is. But Jacob reminds us it's never wrong to hang on to faith. Hold on to faith for as long as you have to. Never lose hope. Never lose heart. Jacob never possessed the promised land. In fact, at the end of his life, he died in Egypt. He never possessed the promised land, but he's a hero of faith. It's never wrong to hold on and believe in the promises of God. Jacob says to us, don't stop believing. Don't stop believing. Yeah, don't stop believing. Thought I said that wrong. Don't stop believing. Always believe. Amen. Always trust. Always hope in God. Always trust in God. Always have faith in God. And then there's Joseph. See, Joseph is the most unique of all the patriarchs. All these patriarchs were nomadic and they lived in tents and gathered herds and wealth. And Joseph is totally different. I don't have time for all of his story, but some of you know his story, and some of you think you know his story, and he's one of those stories that's kind of well known outside of church walls. But Joseph is a son who all the other brothers were jealous of. And so one day they decided to kill him. And then one brother stepped in and said, no, we'll just sell him to slaves. And so, long story short, he's sold to slaves. He's taken to a foreign nation. He works, he ends up as a slave in the house of a master named Potiphar. And he rises up through the ranks in Potiphar's house, and he's head of household. And then he's falsely accused of rape. And so he's thrown in prison and forgotten, but in due time he finds favor in the prison with the warden, and he moves up, and eventually Pharaoh, the king, hears about him, and he comes to interpret Pharaoh's dreams. And all of this that I've just told you takes decades in Joseph's life. He comes to Pharaoh, and he interprets Pharaoh's dreams by going and praying to God, and God reveals the secret. And Pharaoh is so impressed with Joseph and his God that he makes Joseph prime minister of Egypt. He's second in command to Pharaoh. He's going to see them through 7 years of famine. See, he spent all of his adult life in Egypt. He doesn't know anything about living in the tents. When he was a teenager, they sold him out of that lifestyle. And God has had his hand on him. And God used him. And God has a bigger plan than just a 7-year famine, by the way. He's going to bring Joseph's family, his brothers and their the wives and all the nephews and nieces and all the cattle and herd. He's going to bring them into the land of Egypt under Pharaoh's command. See, God had blessed and used Joseph in a mighty way. Later in his life, Joseph would be united with his family, and they would come and live in Egypt, like I said, and they thought he was long gone. They thought he was dead and buried. But Joseph reminds them, no, God's hand has been on my life for such a time as this. But there came a time when Joseph would die. And I really skipped through that story on purpose because I want to get to this, because it's the faith part of his story. See, comes a time when Joseph would die. There's Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, Israel, and Joseph. 4 generations, at least 200 years span minimum in all that time. And not one of them possessed the promised land, but every one of them died believing God for the promise. That's why they're heroes of faith. And when Joseph was dying, see, his entire life was a life of faith. He received God's dreams. He knew what it was. He trusted God even when he was a slave. He trusted God in prison. He trusted God when he was in Pharaoh's court. He trusted God all the time. It was a life of faith. But Joseph's greatest statement of faith, I believe, are found in his dying words. His dying words give fruit to his entire life of faith. Genesis 50 says this, then Joseph said to his brothers, I am about to die, but God will surely come to your aid and take you up out of this land to the land he promised on oath to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And Joseph made the sons of Israel swear an oath and said, God will surely come to your aid. And here's the clincher. And then you must carry my bones up from this place. Joseph says to his brothers, I'm going to die in Egypt, but God is going to bring us to the promised land. And when he does, you take my bones with you. My body may die in this land, but my bones belong in the promised land. I may die in Egypt, but my heart is in the promised land. You may die in this world, but your heart better belong to heaven. I will die in this land, but carry my bones to the promised land. And that's what they did. See, Joseph was not content to have his bones rest in Egypt. Because Egypt was not his home. The promise of Abraham was his home. The promise of Isaac was his home. The promise of Jacob was his home. Egypt was not his inheritance. Egypt is not the promised land. Joseph longed for the fulfillment of the promise of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. See how Joseph thinks about himself? He doesn't even mention himself with them. It's the promise of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Yet we see it lived out in Joseph's faith. If you don't know the end of the story, Exodus 13, Joshua chapters 24, they tell us that when God, through Moses, took Israel out of Egypt towards the promised land, that they picked up Joseph's bones and they carried them with him. And they buried them in Joshua's day in the promised land. See, a man who had faith, it would be 400 plus years before his bones would get to the promised land. But when he died in faith in God. Joseph believed the promise. You can have faith like Joseph. You can have faith like Joseph. How? I'm so glad you asked me. Trust God. Believe what God says. Hold on to the things that God shows you and tells you. Hold on to the things that he's written in his word. You can have faith like Joseph. You have to hang on to the word of God. That's what Joseph did. He never saw the promised land. It would be 400 plus years before he would get there. But he believed the day he died that his bones would rest in the land promised to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Would you stand with me this morning? That's a lot of stories for this. I know the writer to the Hebrews takes these three lives and puts them into three sentences. Why are these three heroes? Why does the roll call of faith, why does Hebrews 11 list these men as heroes of faith? And you'll notice that in all three of them, the writer of the Hebrews keeps talking about their blessing. The thing that ties them together as heroes of faith is their blessing. Because even though they died without seeing the fulfillment, they still believed God with their last breath. Because they believed that it was important for them to bless the next generation and remind them. It was their job to tell the next generation, there's a promise in store for you, but you have to hold on to God. Why are these three heroes? Because they encouraged those who came after them to hold on to faith in God. You can be a hero too. You can do what these men have done. You too could be a hero. You can hang on to the promises of God in your life. You have to tell the next generation about the faithfulness of the God that you know. You have to make sure that those who are coming after you will be able to follow in the way that you have set for them. See, it's not just about me, and it's not just about you, and it's not just about here, and it's not just about now. It's about those who are coming after us. It's about the next generation. It's about passing on our faith. It's about passing on our hope. It's about passing on to others that there is a God who loves and cares and wants them. If we do not teach the next generation, it will die with you. If we do not teach the next generation, then it ends here. We are called to be heroes of our day. We're called to be heroes of faith today. My question to you is, will you be a hero? Will you be a hero? Will you live a life of faith for others to see? Will you care so much about the promise of God on your life? Would you care so much about the words that God has spoken? Would you care so much about what God has shown us in His Word that you would do anything to make sure the next generation knows it? Will you be a hero of faith? You need to start believing like a hero. You need to start having the faith of a hero, and you need to pass it on to the next generation. And that starts today. Father, we thank you for your help and your presence in this house today.